Final hour, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Nick Keyser here with you on this Thursday morning. Take your thoughts on our phone and text lines driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. Robbie and Rex Road brought to you by First Horizon. Big bank muscle, small bank hustle. Visit FirstHorizon.com/get it all. Let's go to our phone line and welcome in our friend Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports to the program. Charles, how we doing? What's going on?
I'm doing well, gents. How you doing this morning?
We're doing great. You know, neither one of us have been able to walk into a coffee shop this morning and be verbally accosted. We discussed that earlier in the show. So, good stuff. So, let's just start there. What do you make of, first off, the Jordan Schultz report that, you know, Brady is hosting Stafford up in Montana and they're going skiing together and all those things. Rappaport refutes that and says they just met by happenstance. And then apparently Schultz just starts yelling at Rappaport in the Starbucks up there in Indianapolis.
I love it. I love it.
Who's right, it's, Charles? Who's right?
All right, so I'm gonna wade into territory here that'll probably upset both guys.
Good.
So I'm going to get accosted by both of them.
I mean, you could kick the crap out of both of them, let's be honest.
Yeah, I swear to God, I was like, I wish someone would. this took up a very large chunk of my day yesterday, texting a lot of people, including individuals involved. So
yeah, you got some information, didn't you?
So look, here's the deal. Like, Brady and Stafford absolutely were together. Okay, and it was they skied together.
Whoa, you do the bunny hill too? No way.
Yeah, right. And so Brady's camp is, and Don Yee, his agent, have been very adamant that this was just a chance encounter. The two guys came across each other, hung out. That was it. That was not anything beyond that. It wasn't like a, you know, planned meetup and like, oh, we're going to go hang out and ski and spend this time together in a recruitment period or whatever. I will say this about Don Yee. Don Yee was in the middle of the tampering investigation that happened with Sean Payton and Tom Brady and the Miami Dolphins. Personally, and I'm sorry to say this about Don, I don't trust him. Okay, so I don't anything he says about what happened, I am suspect about the believability of Don Yee representing what was truth and what is false, right?
Unlike most agents. It's,
right. And in Don's, you know, in his corner, I will say that's like most agents. You're right, Joe. It's a great representation of it. I mean, it's you do your job and you try to cool things down as much as possible. It's a remarkable chance meeting, but at the end of the day, the reason why it doesn't matter is because the Rams have already told Matt Stafford, go ahead. Like, go find out. There's no tampering here because we're telling you.
Right, so be honest. You know, so be honest.
Yeah, okay, I mean, fair enough. I don't know. Again, I don't know if it's honesty or dishonesty. I just don't believe really anyone involved in the process here who represents any side of the story, right? And I'm not banging on any reporters here. It's that I don't trust Tom Brady. I don't trust Don Yee. I don't really trust Matt Stafford. I've been, you know, this is not my first rodeo here. I know stories of tampering where literally coaches are talking to players on their wives' cell phones, like just mess up, like crazy stuff that goes on with tampering. But again, it's not tampering because the Rams are like, go do your thing. Like, whatever. It is what it is. So,
well, then I'm just going to go ski in Montana.
Yeah. I mean, George Schultz represents it, obviously, is, you know, the way he framed it was, this is something where you've got Tom Brady, you know, doing work as an owner, lining this up and talking to Matt Stafford and recruiting him. They need a quarterback. There's no question about that. But it comes after the fact that it's already been reported that both the Giants and the Raiders have shown interest, which obviously only amps it. You're like, man, wow, what a coincidence that these two guys. So it's, I don't know. And then Ian steps on the report and says, you know, not factual. Like this is misrepresented the way that Jordan Schultz put it out there. it wasn't, you know, billed to be this big, like, recruiting effort or whatever. Jordan didn't like that. He sees him in the Starbucks in Indianapolis, confronts him hilariously. Somebody there sends me a picture of the you know, beginning of the exchange, which I thought was pretty funny. And it's
what a bunch of dorks we all are.
Yeah. I mean, it was funny because I was telling Don, I'm like, this is like we're worse than basketball players when we fight in the media. Like, it's like basketball players don't know how to fight, ends up in like a slap fight. Like, this is even worse. Like, media members definitely can't fight each other. And so, you know, I'm getting my jokes off to everybody. You know, I'm not going to say who I'm texting, but at one point I'm like, have situational awareness. In that situation, you make sure Jordan Schultz punches you. because, you know, like, Howard Schultz is his father, and he is the former CEO of Starbucks.
And you're in a Starbucks. That's, you will never pay for another coffee.
Yes, and you're in a Starbucks. And the great thing is, like, in the photo, the Starbucks logo is, like, above Jordan in this picture of the confrontation happening. I'm like, this is a Pulitzer. Like, they're going to – you hang it in the Louvre, the picture of this. And as I joked, I'm like, all I see is one guy who's heir to a coffee fortune and another guy who owns a portion of a racing horse. I'm like, let those two guys fight. these are the two guys I want to see fight. But it's I love the media beef. It's been a really long time since I've seen a media beef like this happen. I've seen agents get into it a couple of times over the 25 years that I've covered the combine. I've seen, you know, late nights where you will see pretty close to fisticuffs. I've seen executives get into it.
You and I saw some real interesting stuff late night in Combine 1 year, but we won't get into that one.
Yeah. Prior to cell phones, cell phone cameras existing, it was a bacchanal. it was a buffet of behavior no one would ever want to see on social media. That has tamped down significantly. So, very funny moment, I will say, and it's this is the era, though, that we're in where, you know, media members often have beefs, particularly when someone's commenting on your report or whatever. I mean, it results in some hurt feelings. So, but look, with Stafford, I'll say this about Stafford. I guess let's get to the root cause of this whole thing. I think the Rams would love to keep him. There's no question about that. I think it's just
really it reads easily the other way.
It does, but it's about money. Like, I think the Rams are like, we're not paying you $50 million a year. Like, it's straight up. Like, it's really two issues, I think, with the Rams. Number one, I think Sean McVay would like a real commitment. Like, I don't think Sean McVay wants to do this year to year. I think he thinks, absolutely, we can win games with Matt Stafford. Like, we saw how we performed in the playoffs. We were close to beating the Eagles. But he's like, I don't want to keep going to the table every offseason.
Cheap. Then pay him a reasonable salary.
I think where they are in their build, it's just a weird situation because they're not in a moment in their history with Les Snead as the general manager and Sean McVay, the head coach. They're not in the, hey, we're all in, like they were in the past. Right now, they're like, hey, we have a great young core here. We have a number of guys we want to extend. We actually have some guys we'd like to target in free agency, and we can't do that if we have a $50 million a year quarterback. And they've been honest with Matthew about, look, that's just not the number that we're looking at right now. And Matthew, conversely, is sitting there saying, I don't have much longer here. Like, I might only have a year left, maybe 2 years left. I want to be – and there's nine quarterbacks making over $50 million a year, and he's sitting there saying, me not being in that group is a joke. And he's right, I think, at this stage. I do think he's a $50 million a year quarterback, but for how long? Maybe only a year. And so I think he's trying to get that last big bite of the apple. Is there a middle ground between those two? Yes, I think there potentially is. And I think that would be what would result in him returning back to the Rams. But I think the Rams are also looking at other options. They're looking at some of these young guys in the draft. and deciding whether or not it's just time to make the pivot and the move. And they're also wondering, what would someone give us for Stafford? So like the Giants, which I think is very real, the Giants know, leadership there knows, this is it, we got to win. If we go 7-10 this year, we're all fired. Everybody's fired top to bottom. This idea of drafting a quarterback at 3 is not going to save us, unless it's like a Jaden Daniels, and they don't see a Jaden Daniels in this draft. So I think the idea of the Giants trying to figure out, if we give up some draft compensation, can we bring Stafford in and turn this around on a dime? Maybe we can. That's our best effort here. They're not giving up the number 3 overall pick. So, you know, I know there's this idea, well, what if a team gives up a first? I think a team could give up a second for Matt Stafford at this stage, if they feel like it's something that benefits not only 2025, maybe they also draft a young player and groom them for a year or maybe 2 years. Then I think there are teams, including the Raiders and the Giants, that would be willing to give up second round draft capital and money to bring a Matt Stafford in and sort of turn the key on a plan. So it's a weird situation. I will say this about the Rams, though. I have been impressed, and it's something I told us talking to Lesney, the general manager. I was like, I'm very impressed how above board it is. They're very honest about it. They've been very honest with Stafford. Like, here's where we're at. Go ahead. Do your thing. Go out there. See what you can get. And even in that process, like, Sean McVay came out and said, the reason why they're being this transparent and overt about it is because he felt like he screwed up the Jared Goff situation. He mishandled that really badly with Jared Goff in the process of ultimately dealing him. And he's like, I learned my lesson. I don't want to do that ever again. I want to be as above board as possible. I was shocked that he even admitted that he badly screwed up how he handled Jared Goff throughout that process. And Matt Stafford certainly can't say that he's being burned in this, because they've been very clear and honest about what they want to do.
So on the Abdul Carter front, Charles, you got the right foot injury that's being talked about after the combine yesterday, the stress reaction. Schefter just put it out there a few minutes ago, actually, that apparently doctors have told him after further scans that surgery is not advisable and that he's going to work out on March the 28th. So how do you view the injury to Abdul Carter? Do you think it has any tangible effect on his draft status when April rolls around?
So the first thing for everybody to remember, he's rehabbing a shoulder injury right now. So he was never going to work out the combine. Everybody knew that. It was always going to be a pro day situation. The stress reaction, so people get what this is, it's not a fracture. It's the precursor to a potential fracture. So stress reactions are found, I don't want to say quite a bit, in combine scans, but it's not uncommon, I would say, for a few guys for this to be discovered. The first thing teams ask is, do we put a screw into it and immediately start the process of rehab, which is, you know, takes you a couple months, depending on where it is, you know, how bad the area looks. But, you know, typically, if we're just talking about the average time span, you put a screw in it, it'll take 2 months, you know, for it to get to a point where whatever area is affected, it calms down, heals up, what little damage is there, and you no longer fear a fracture occurring. Or do you just rest it? And that's the camp that Carter falls into right now. It's, hey, you don't have to have surgery right now. You don't have to put a screw in. Just rest it and you know, go about your business in the off season. I don't think it'll ultimately affect his draft status, but the idea that it's just not concerning at all for teams, I don't think that's factual, because any big guys, offensive linemen, defensive linemen, players who heavily leverage below the waist, if there's a foot issue, teams take that very, very seriously, because that's often, if you want to talk about like the history of injuries, foot injuries are often the ones that either linger, crop up again, and then ultimately eventually end careers, if they are of the variety where it's chronic, where it's recurring, right? The defensive tackle, Jerzon Newton, had it last year. It was different, but concerning, but there was a lot of concern last year. The kid out of Illinois, about him having like a chronic foot issue. He was potentially going to be a first round pick. That didn't ultimately happen. The Commanders ended up drafting him, but he did slip. I don't think this is that kind of situation, but you know, I don't want to say there's no concern there at all. I talked to a couple of teams about this late last night, and it sounded like what Ian ended up reporting was coming down the pipeline, where it's like he just needs some rest. He's not going to need any surgery right now, and he'll be ready to go. Which is I think that's the best case scenario, when you don't have to be invasive with a foot, and you can just let, you know, someone rest, and then they're good to go at their pro day. Really, so what the focus right now will be is, let's see the pro day now. Let's see where this goes. And I also think there's less alarm because teams weren't expecting him to work out anyway because of him rehabbing the shoulder injury. So it bears watching. I would say if you're a Titans fan and this is someone that you're staring at going, that's who we're going to select at number one overall, you're going to want to pay a lot of attention to the pro day and kind of where his workout process goes and his visit process goes from there. If there is a if something goes wrong in this process, yeah, then I think that would affect his draft status and he potentially slips. If it does not and he works out the pro day without a hitch, he's going to be very much in play for the top pick in the draft.
So I'm on team Travis Hunter is going to be an all-time great corner in the NFL. There are draft analysts and teams that look at him that way. There are some who look at him more as a receiver. Right now, if you took a general estimation of what you've heard more or maybe even like strong opinions, yeah, either way, are there like teams that are like, oh my God, hell no, he's not a receiver, or hell no, he's not a corner, or his value is, I hear some people say the value is that he can do both. I have a hard time buying that because of the way this league beats people up. But what's your overall sense for how people view him?
Overall sense in terms of corner versus wideout, I feel like it's maybe 25% of the people you talk to feel like wideout is his future in the NFL. If they're just talking about, you know, what does he do well? What are his comps? Some people think like physically, when you kind of look at what his makeup is and what they think, how he would test out if, you know, if he ultimately were to test out the way Justin Jefferson did when he went through the draft, they actually comp him to a more raw Justin Jefferson, like not on Justin Jefferson's level, but he could potentially get there if that is his sole focus. Those are the teams that really like him as a wide receiver. Obviously, Andrew Barry, the GM of the Cleveland Browns, came out and said, we view him as a wide receiver. I read that as, we're not taking him at number two in the draft. That's how I process that. Other teams, so a couple of different factors. Teams will tell you if he's going to play two ways, and I feel like this is pretty consistent. It's, you really want him to be a full-time corner, part-time wideout. It's harder to do it the other way, being a full-time wideout and an occasional corner, just because of what the position really requires. What, in terms of studying, work on game film, scheme, just the situation is not something where you lean into, oh, he's going to be a full-time wide receiver, and every once in a while we're going to throw him out there in the slot or over the top or wherever. No, teams, if they look at him as a two-way guy, they're like, he's going to be a corner first. The teams that look at him as a wideout very much, I think, believe you really solely focus on him being a wideout. From a financial perspective, he'd be better off being a wideout. If he's going to be a top-tier player, you're going to make more money being a top-tier wideout over the long term than being a top-tier corner. But when you talk to guys who just crush just the numbers, like the analytics, they will tell you, corner, it's not even close. They're like, his data as a corner is immaculate. He's a fantastic corner from whether it's man zone, his closing speed, his range, his instincts, all these different things. It really feels like they buy into this idea that he is an elite level corner right now, and that translates pretty quickly. As far as a wideout, the criticisms you hear is he doesn't run the greatest routes, like his route discipline isn't the best, but teams are also like, he's playing an insane amount of snaps in college. Certainly one aspect is going to suffer, and the one that he can play at a high level and stuff and not be as precise as wideout. He can get by on athleticism as wideout far more than as a corner. You can't make mistakes as a corner and succeed. You can make mistakes as a wide receiver and still be a very impactful player. So very fun guy to watch. I do think some teams view him as a potential two-way player. We'll see. I mean, maybe early. I don't think that's something you do over the expanse of his career. At some point, he'll have to settle on it. And I would just say I fully expect whoever drafts him to draft him ultimately as a corner first. And but there is that option that if it gets off to a rocky start or it's not what teams expect, you do have the back door of, all right, well, let's flip him to wide receiver. And we feel like we can develop as an elite wide receiver. You're almost getting sort of two – you're getting an out with a prospect that you don't normally get. You don't draft guys going, hey, we could play him on either side of the ball. So he's special enough that he gives you an out that if for some reason you don't like what you're seeing, where you start him and how you start him, you always have the option to move him in a different direction.
Charles, great stuff, man. Keep your head on a swivel. If you walk in any coffee shops today, you never know what might happen. And we'll talk to you next week.
Real quick, what's your biggest meat to beat? You ever getting into something, you know? I mean, if you push Rappaport, you knock him half a block.
No, I mean, are we talking just – are we just talking media members or players? Because, I mean, players, obviously, there's been some pretty bad ones.
No, I'm talking media members.
Media members only.
Have you ever tried to, like, did you ever, like, you know, like put a little kick me sign on Mitch Albom's back or something? I mean, you always take shots at him.
Yeah, I've never gotten in the face of any media member. I will say, you and I, going back to one story where to this day I still think about it. We go to cover, I'm senior college, we're covering Michigan State football. You were there for this. And we go to Northwestern to cover Northwestern, obviously suburb Evanston.
Oh, God. Yes.
this is great. So the guy I'm working with, it's me and another guy, right? And the other guy who's on the beat was interesting.
Don't name him.
I'm not going to name him. Of course I'm not going to name him.
You screamed at
him. So we go to Northwestern, but we take different cars, right? We're like, all right, like we split the traveling group into two. I get to the stadium on time. I'm there. I'm diligent, prepared to do my work. This dude and the individuals that were with him don't show. They don't show. It's late. We get to the point where it's like kickoff. They're kicking the ball off. This dude is not there. He rolls in. He's wearing an autographed NASCAR t-shirt
nice.
In a press box. it looks like it's never been washed, probably because it's autographed. And I'm like, why are you late? Where have you been? Oh, we got lost, this, that, and the other, like all these different excuses. And as we're sitting there, he picks up a Burger King cup and proceeds to sip from it. And I, as Joe said, I screamed at him. I started screaming at him in the press box because I'm like, if you were late, why are you do you have time to stop at Burger King for breakfast on your way over here? And really, it was mostly probably about the NASCAR shirt and just everything else. So, yeah, I flipped out on this guy in the Northwestern press box.
I was there,
and
I flipped out.
And Joe,
sorry I brought it up.
That.
I would have liked to have seen it. Charles, we'll talk to you next week.
All right, take care, fellas.
All right, Charles Robinson. Hey. Just got to keep your head on a swivel out there. We'll react to what Charles had to say coming up next. This is Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Got some tickets to give away to see the Preds take on the Winnipeg Jets at Bridgestone Arena tonight. Puck drop at 7 o'clock. Be the third caller. 615-737-1025. You win a pair of tickets to see the Preds take on the Winnipeg Jets tonight. Check out Nashville's best deal this week. It's from Barrio Burrito Bar in Murfreesboro. At Barrio Burrito Bar, every bite, a celebration of fresh ingredients, vibrant spices, and bold flavors dancing on your taste buds like a fiesta in your mouth, Joe. Head to thegamenashville.com/deals and get half off a $25 gift card while supplies last. Appreciate Charles Robinson for being with us in the last segment.
That reminds me. Gabe. No more reading Gabe's texts. I tell you what, man. It's someday Big Joe's going to have his comeuppance. But great piece on Big Joe in Williamson County Living.
Yes, yes.
And a lovely picture of Chase and Big Joe.
Oh, very lovely.
Really, really good stuff, though, in all seriousness from Big Joe. Real quick, too, Robbie, I want to shout out Greg Sage.
Yes.
An absolute – that guy works his butt off. But Belmont, Casey Alexander, 15 straight 20-win seasons. Gonzaga, Oregon, the only other programs that can say that right now. That's pretty good.
That's pretty darn good. No doubt about that. What did you make of Charles's thoughts on Abdul Carter and the injury? We talked about the injury specifically earlier in the show, a stress reaction, which, as Charles laid out, is not a stress fracture, but maybe the precursor to a stress fracture. Information coming out about 30 minutes ago that Schefter put out there that apparently no surgery is going to be required for Abdul Carter. It's not advisable. He's planning to work out at his pro day on March the 28th.
Yeah, and Charles laid out the case to have the surgery is you get the screw in there and then you're done with it. But that's fine. Whatever the doctors say, to me, it's like, is it really that important to work out at your pro day? It's great. You know, people want to go see you, but you know, the film is what it is. And I also understand the foot concern with bigger people, as Charles said. We talked earlier in the show. These injuries definitely are a concern with basketball players. You know, the nature of that sport, the pounding on hard floor. I've seen careers end because, like, stress fractures kept happening.
Yeah.
And yeah, certainly it's a bigger concern, like, in the NFL with the bigger guys. I mean, Carter is not 6'4", 320. So, it would not stop me. I mean, again, unless there's more information we don't have right now, and if there's an overall sense that this is just an injury-prone player, I don't know of injury history beyond what he has right now. Now, he does have two, so you know, you look into it. But based on the information I have now, this would not stop me if I thought he was the best player from drafting him at all.
No,
I wouldn't hesitate.
I don't think it would stop me either. You know, I having the shoulder and the foot thing at the same time is concerning. Like, you look as much into it as you can if you're the Titans. You know, is this going to be something that's recurring, I think, is what you have to get to the bottom of. Like, is he just going to be on the verge of a stress fracture his entire career? Is, you know, if he does get a stress fracture in his foot one time, like, how often is that going to happen moving forward? Like, you know, that's part of this. But, like, if rest is the best option here and it's going to go away and he's going to be fine, then I don't think that affects your draft part of this. And I said it earlier, like, if you're looking for just the total clean bill of health for guys that are playing football at a high level, you're probably not going to find that all that much. You just have to be, I think, intentional and be in constant communication with your medical people in terms of what sort of injury history is important to you and what is maybe you look at and you say, yeah, you don't really care much about that.
And this would be very interesting. There may be some teams that are like, okay, yep.
Could be.
Thanks. I'm out. You know, again, how many teams are even – I mean, there's a small group of teams that would even have a shot at him. He's going to go that high. But, look, there were teams as – remember, was it Sando at the Athletic who reported – you know, I think it was the Athletic. We reported that after Farley was drafted that some teams were just like,
I'm totally off the board.
Absolutely, yeah. Get him out of my board.
Yeah.
Now, that is so different from this. But maybe there are some teams that are so never injury teams that they would be out on him now. What's funny? What did Gabe text?
It's not Gabe. It's okay. Just one texter says, Joe downplaying a foot injury a day after telling us he downplayed his daughter's injury is quite something.
Uh-huh. he'll be fine. Don't worry about it. Rub a little dirt on that thing, okay? In my day, hey, this is because in JV football at Prince George High School, I got concussed, and they were like, hey, it's a little smelly. Get back out there, bull in the ring, okay? So this is what we dealt with in my generation, and you, all of you soft Gen Zers need to suck it up. How about that?
A lot of players.
That is funny, though.
A lot of people continue to be very concerned about Abdul Carter's injury on the draft. I got a lot of Titans fans are like, yeah, no thanks. Just, yeah. We don't want anyone hurt.
Well, look, for Titans fans, it is kind of more understandable, right? I mean, like it's
they've been down that road.
Yeah, you've had the history. I just this thing on its face, on its own, with the if the information we have now, it's not stopping me. Now again, I'm drafting Travis Hunter anyway over Abdul Carter, but that's totally separate from the injury.
I will say when Charles started his spiel on Hunter, and he began with. Some teams kind of view him like Justin Jefferson. And I was like, really? Well, if that's what he is, then draft him as a wide receiver.
I know. Please. I was about to switch teams there.
615-737-1025, our phone number. Preds pick to click. Coming up next, it is a Preds game day. They're taking on the Winnipeg Jets tonight. Be the first caller at 615-737-1025. If you guess the goal scorer for tonight's game, you win a pair of tickets to a future Nashville Predators home game. We will do that. We will wrap up the show with our final thoughts from the NFL Combine, the Matt Stafford situation, and more. Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, the game. Preds pick to click on Robbie and Rex Road. Preds in action taking on the Winnipeg Jets tonight, who have won 11, count them, 11 consecutive games. No change in the standings last time out in our competition. Rex Road in first place with 11 correct answers. The listeners have 8. I have 7. Keezer has 4. With that in mind, we head to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Welcome Stephanie to the program. Stephanie, good morning. Thanks for calling in. Who is your pick to click tonight for the Nashville Predators?
I'm going to say Luke Evangelista, or as we like to call him, Haircut.
Oh, I like it. I like it. Very nicely done. Appreciate you calling in.
So,
Evangelista off the board, Rex Road. Your selection in the competition.
That's a deep cut. This season, that's a deep cut.
I mean, quite frankly, with the offense going on around here right now, there's a lot of deep cuts.
Well, I suppose you're right about that. I'll go Forsberg.
That was a lot of dramatic buildup to go with that. That's good. Evangelista, Forsberg off the board. Man. You know what? I'll go Colton Sissons. Give me Colton Sissons the selection.
I think it's appropriate that we start doing some stuff like this.
Well, yeah. I mean,
it's time for you to go with UC Soros.
Evangelista, Forsberg, Sissons off the board. Keezer, your pick to click.
Well, the Predican would definitely pick Soros every time he touches the puck. So, but I'll go with Jonathan Marchessault. I'm not going to do any deep cuts, guys.
All right, going with Marchessault. Evangelista, Forsberg, Sissons, Marchessault, the selection in Preds pick to click. We'll see if the Preds can slow down the Winnipeg Jets tonight and stop the 11-game winning streak. Or if you're a Predators fan listening, rooting for the draft, you're saying, hey, Winnipeg, 12 in a row. We'll see how it goes.
Like, hey. The team can actually play kind of well, and you can like some of what you're seeing, and you still lose.
Could be happening.
When you play a team like that, that's that's a feasible outcome, right?
It is a feasible outcome. Now, they did. They were in Ottawa last night. Hellebuck played last night, so you're probably looking at a backup goaltender on the second half of back-to-back going from Canada to the United States. So, a lot working against the Jets from that standpoint.
Yeah, and it's usually a team like this that ends like the big streaks, too. Yeah. So, I actually kind of like the Preds. I think through it.
What do you make of some of the proposed rule changes in the National Football League that have been kind of outlined yesterday, including maybe some overtime rules that are like the postseason overtime rules in the NFL, where you get 15 minutes, and if the first team scores a touchdown, you get another chance after that.
Right.
Go ahead.
Yeah, sorry. That was like the Bills-Chiefs rule.
Right.
You know, they change it to, okay, even with a touchdown in the playoffs, the other team gets the ball. So that may be a thing now in the regular season. Apparently the competition committee, so the overtime was sudden death before 2011, and it's actually the receiving team won a higher percentage of games from 2017 to 2024 than they did from 2001 to 2011. It's not much higher. It's like a 1%, 56-8 to 55-4. But I guess that's part of the impetus for, okay, just make it, even if you score a touchdown, their team gets the ball. It doesn't really, I kind of like if you get the ball and you go down and score a touchdown, ball game.
I agree.
But I'm not going to, it's not some huge deal to me. The first down thing's interesting. When I saw it, I got excited because they were talking, it's like virtual spotting, you know? Yeah. So I'm like, good, we can get rid of like a terrible spot. It's about time. Tennis can do this. Why can't the NFL? But it's not. It's just that they can signal to the officials that it's a first down. It's still a human spotting.
Right.
So, again, not really moving the needle too much.
Yeah. Well, eventually, I think we're going to get into the either the chip in the ball or some sort of technology that allows it. Roger Goodell spoke about that earlier in the Super Bowl, I believe, when they were talking about technology they're working on to do that. It's like, well, tennis can do it. He did point out the challenges of the oblong ball.
Yeah.
That you have to
oblong
in.
Ball and, you know, yeah, like where, yeah. I mean, there are, you know, there are challenges for sure. It's difficult, but I feel like there's got to be a way to figure that out, right? If we could get rid of a terrible spot to screw a team over, that'd be a good thing to get rid of.
That'd be nice. Matthew asking if we think we'll see any big names for the Preds move before next Friday's deadline. Big names, I would say no. I think Nyquist will probably be moved. I would not be surprised if McCarron got moved. I would not be surprised if Shen got moved. And I would not be surprised if Sissons got moved. Beyond that, we'll see. But if you're talking like, you know, Stamkos or Shea or Forsberg or anybody like that, no, I don't think that's going to happen.
I mean, Nyquist to me is like he's got enough skill and recently enough produced enough that someone out there is going to be like, yes, let's rent Gus Nyquist.
I guess the one big name that you could consider, like, does somebody just blow Barry Trotz away with an offer for Ryan O'Reilly? I don't know. And, like, how much would they have to blow him away for him to be like, yep, okay, I'll trade him? I don't know what the answer to that is. My guess is Ryan O'Reilly probably will be a member of the Nashville Predators when the trade deadline comes and goes. That's just my guess.
He'll blame himself for not being traded.
Yeah, he will. Never seen anything quite like it in a post-game press conference setting. It's like, I will put every ounce of blame possible on me. Every time.
A year like this,
I respect.
Boy, a lot of opportunities, yeah. Unfortunately.
He's had a lot of opportunities. I've just been terrible from start to finish. Thank you, Ryan. All righty. Good stuff. That does it for us today. We'll be back to see if the Predators tomorrow have ended the Jets' winning streak. We'll see what other news happens today at the NFL Combine. We'll see if there's any media fights.
It's newsy.
It could happen. Could happen. Stilly, I think, will be with us tomorrow. We'll see if he shows up. Jason Big Joe coming up next. You're listening to 102.5, 106.3, The Game.
Don't stay out till 2 a.m., Stilly.